Pope is the thing with feathers.
Pope is the thing with feathers.
That's like a bird.
Like a bird.
That perches in the soul.
That perches in the soul. Welcome to the Thing with Feathers podcast, a podcast about birds and hope. I'm your host, birding enthusiast, Courtney Ellis. Welcome back to the Thing with Feathers podcast. I'm your host, Courtney Ellis. So excited to have with us today, Roy Howard. Roy has been an avid birder for nearly 40 years. He serves now as a freelance retired pastor and a leadership coach. If he had a motto, it would be Mary Oliver's advice: pay attention, be astonished, tell about it. Welcome, Roy.
Thank you, Courtney. It's great to be with you. Looking forward to our conversation and on so many topics that we share in common. So I'm happy to be here. And I'm so happy that I had a copy of your new book coming out. You don't have to say all about it because I can say all about it. It's a really excellent book, and I want to tell the listeners why first, because it uniquely blends a pastoral narrative with insights around grief and sorrow and how to navigate all of that with the marvelous insights into and commentary on birds that that show up and how the behavior of those birds has links to how we interact with one another, and especially how we find glimpses of hope and light in the midst of pretty real grief. So I think birders will love, this is a kind of a sweet spot for you. And birders will find insights about these 12 birds that you have. I think it's 12, it might be less than that, but the birds that you've named, but they'll also find some insight on being a real human being in the midst of grief and sorrow and finding life in God's creation. So congratulations on the book.
Thank you, Roy. That's really, really kind. Roy and I actually met because he was writing a review of the book for the Presbyterian Outlook, for which, for you Presbyterian insiders, that's a really familiar publication. But they said, we wanted to give this review to someone who knew something about birds. Do you know Roy? And I said, no, I don't. And once the review was finished, we got in touch and I asked him to be on the show because in our 60 plus episodes, we have yet to have another Presbyterian pastor birder on the show besides me. And it's time, Roy. It's time.
I agree. I totally yes.
Well, thank you for being here. Roy is speaking with us today from the great state of Maryland, where spring migration has started, and you may hear a little bird sound in the background because the day is so beautiful, he had to move to his porch. So he is joining us from the outdoors. Roy, tell us, how did you first get started in birding? You said you've been doing this for 40 years, so you were birding before it was cool. How did it start?
It's always been cool. We just didn't know it, right? Well, I'll tell you how it started. It's a poignant story, and it kind of relates to your book, actually. So I was a graduate student at Florida State in Tallahassee, very close friends with an Episcopal priest there whose wife worked with me in the mental health center as a social worker. So this priest was an avid birder, and he said, and I was not. He asked me if I wanted to go out at dawn, before dawn, actually, and see a special bird. And I said, of course I do, because I'm going to go out with you. He was a mentor to me in many ways. So he said, great, and I'll lend you a pair of binoculars, because I didn't have any binoculars. And there we were at St. Mark's Wildlife Refuge on the panhandle of Florida, when right as sun was coming up, I can remember it as if it were yesterday. Right as sun was coming up was a vermilion flycatcher sitting on a bush about 30 yards from me. And I promise you, it felt as though I had seen a glimpse of God. And so that's my spark bird, the vermilion flycatcher. I've never, ever seen another one. That was in 1981. I have it marked in my Peterson's bird book. And but I did see the vermilion flycatcher's cousin who lives on the Galapagos Islands. And it used to be called Darwin's flycatcher. Now it's called the Brujo flycatcher.
Mm. It comes full circle.
Comes full circle. Yeah.
I love that. So, Roy, you've been birding for 40 years. I love your spark bird. We have vermilion flycatchers out here. They're not super common, but I saw one a couple weeks ago, and now I'm going to think of you whenever nice. I see them. Yeah, you got to come out. You got to come out and visit.
Send me a photo.
So you've been a birder for about 40 years. How long have you been a pastor? When did you get into pastoring? What was your spark bird for pastoring?
That's a good question. But let me just say, because listeners may wonder about this, I also am a father of two daughters who are now adult daughters. So there were stretches when I was not only working hard being a pastor, but trying to be a good dad and a good parent and do all the things that dads and parents and pastors do. So I can't say that I was at the top of my birding game throughout those 40 years, but at some point I'll tell you how it got reignited, and it starts with the word retirement. Yeah. So, what got me into being a pastor? Well, I was a social worker for 10 years, and I went to actually my pastor and told him that I think there's a deeper call here. I was the youngest elder elected and still in that particular church in Tallahassee. So he said, why don't you talk to some others? So I talked to every pastor that I knew, and I knew a lot in Tallahassee. Every single one of them, this is true, Courtney, said, no, do not do this unless it will not go away.
Hmm.
So that my pastor said, just spend a year. We didn't know the word discernment in those days. People didn't talk about that. So I basically spent a year discerning whether this was a good call or the right call, God's call. And it didn't go away. My wife and I lived on a commune with quite a few other families, and that didn't go away. And so that's how it went. I received a fellowship to go and study, and we packed up our van and our two-year-old daughter and took off to go to seminary, and that led me to the church. Mm-hmm. I did not think I would be preaching, but then I ran into a fellow you may know of, Fred Craddock, and Fred Craddock changed my whole understanding of what it is to be a person and a preacher. Hmm. And so, so that's that.
I was that using was his commentary last week. He's a good writer in addition to, yeah.
Yeah, on Luke.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's one of the best ones in the series, I think. I love the Luke commentary and I love the Esther commentary, both highlights.
Yeah, so the birding and the pastoring are pretty much my life, actually, and they still are in different ways.
If you're going to give your life to two things, the church and the birds are two pretty great things to give your life to. I'm a little biased because that's essentially what I'm giving my own life to, but I respect it.
Yeah. Well, I think I want to say something about that quote that has meant so much to me. Since I first saw it, it is a wonderful thing. Pay attention, be astonished, and tell about it. There is so much in that that is important to me. So I go about trying to do that, trying to pay attention. It's so interesting. I was listening the other day to an interview with Marilynne Robinson, whose new book, Reading Genesis, is coming out. And in this interview, she talks about, in response to a question, she talks about the role of beauty in theology and in the understanding of what creation is about, and how a beauty becomes a kind of portal into the experience of all that God intended in creation. So at one point in this, she says, you know, the world is a beautiful place. and it deserves our attention to it. So for me, birding is a way of paying attention. Mm. It really is a way of just slowing down and listening. So when my wife and I go walking around the neighborhood, I'm always listening for what's happening in our neighborhood with my ears wide open. And so the result of that, as you know, is that the creation then is alive the way the psalmist talked about it. You know, when I'm out in the woods and the trees are bending in the wind, I understand why the psalmist said, you know, the trees are praising, giving thanks and praise to the glory of God. And I fully believe they are in some way that I can't comprehend. I don't need to comprehend, but I can experience it. And in doing so, tell about it. That's the astonishment part.
Mary Oliver is always a good idea. Big. Big fan of Mary Oliver. I love your integration too of Marilynne Robinson's interview. And I'm so looking forward to reading her new book, because I think, you know, beauty won't save the world, but also beauty might just save the world. I think I rest on that precipice between the two. And you write a little bit about the importance of recovering a theology of wonder. And for Yes. our folks listening who maybe aren't churched, define theology first of all, and then tell us about a theology of wonder.
Yeah. Well, that's a great question, because I think in its simplest way, I suppose, theology is exploring the divine, exploring God and what that even means. You know, the object of theology is asking questions about larger questions about being, about the universe that we live in, the earth that we are, at least in my tradition, Christian tradition, are called, and Jewish, are called to steward, right? So that's theology, and just like sociology is about studying organizations and communities and how they operate, theology is about looking at God and asking questions about how does God operate in the world. In my tradition, scripture is really important with that. So asking questions about who is this God that's, you know, causing the trees to shout and the winds to be messengers of God's message, actually. The winds are messengers. All these things that the psalmist, that I'm quite convinced were paying attention to creation when they wrote those prayers. They had to be very much aware of the world in which they're living. And it was not a flat world, it was an alive world. And all of that aliveness they attributed to this inscrutable divine being who caused them to rise up in wonder and praise. So for me, wonder is a doorway into understanding this world that we live in and living from a place of gratitude. Mm-hmm. And it starts with wonder. And not just wonder, the asking questions wonder, although that's important, but the wonder that's related to the capacity to be astonished. And the greater capacity we have to be astonished by another being standing just like you and I are looking at one another right now, and listeners are listening to this, to be astonished by just the simplicity of a white-throated sparrow. You know, its white throat and its yellow right on the lures, with the crown, to be astonished by that expands my experience of the whole world and one another. Kind of a long answer.
But a good one. A really good one.
I bird, by the way, with people who are, I think they would be in the category of what people call either seekers and or nuns, N-O-N-E-S. And when I retired from pastoring, I did have more time on Sunday mornings. And so the birders that I birded with were just, one, amazed that I was a pastor. I try to walk incognito in the world. And once that we became friends, and that opened up to them, so also did their questions and their experience of telling how they were experiencing the world. And conversations came out of that and are still coming out of it that would not occur in any other way. So there's a lot of bridges if we start with astonishment and wonder and gratitude.
That is a word. I think I like to tell people that birds are the great unifier. You know, they say, don't talk religion, don't talk politics. And religion is what I do. You know, religion is what you do. But birds are this beautiful thing that for the most part, even if people aren't really interested in birds, at most they're indifferent to birds. You know, no one really hates birds. So there's this starting place where you can have those conversations, like you said, and build those bridges and build some understanding and some mutual edification and some kindness. I love, you know, finding other pastors who are in that space and making new friends and open to learning.
Yeah, you know that line of the great poet Gerard Manley Hopkins, the world is charged with the grandeur of God. It will shine out like oil, like shook foil. And that is an experience that is open to everyone.
Yeah.
And Hopkins and all the poets know that. Mm. They know that. They're just expressing the way the psalmist did, how they're interacting with this world that all of us live in.
Mm.
Right? It's not bounded by anyone's tradition, including our own. We only have the opportunity as Mary Oliver said, to be astonished and tell about it.
So, Roy, tell us about your birding talks. When you put on these talks, who do you do them for, and what do you like to talk about?
So, can I talk about this morning first?
Sure.
So, I go out every morning, and very early, usually. And so I went out this morning because there's a nest for peregrine falcons that's in the most unlikely place that anyone anywhere could imagine. It's a box that was there. And somewhere in the lore, we know who put this box up, but it's been lost. So it's on the American Legion Bridge. And if you know anything about the Washington, D.C. area, it's the main artery that connects Virginia and Maryland across the Potomac River. Millions of cars go across this every day. I try to avoid it as much as possible because the traffic is a nightmare. So there's also the CNO Canal towpath, which is a 184-mile trail. It's a national park. It's the narrowest national park in the United States. And it goes all along the Potomac River. Well, so I went out this morning very early to go underneath the bridge, and there were two peregrine falcons there flying. And not only were two of them there, but my buddy and I, caught them, you might say, or witnessed. Witness is a better word, in the act of copulating. Right there on the tree underneath. So thousands of cars are driving by and we're watching this peregrine falcon and falcons and all of their beauty. So I just thought I would, because I was astonished, this is my opportunity to tell about it. And what better place to tell about it than right here?
I love that. Peregrine falcons are our oldest child's favorite bird because he's really into superlatives. He likes the strongest, fastest, you know, and he's like, okay, fastest bird, that's my favorite. He drew me a little picture when it's sitting above my writing desk. I'll have to pass on the story to him.
Nice. Yeah, they're breeding there. So that's really cool.
Baby falcons. It's going to be good.
Baby falcons, yes. Yeah. So I think your question had to do with presentations.
What do you like to present on and who do you like to talk to? Because I'm planning my own retirement as I talk to you, Roy. I got like 23, 24 years and I want to do what you're doing. So lead the way.
I love to talk to anybody. And that is the honest to goodness truth. So I think what happened is that I started sharing much more regularly on Instagram and Facebook, my bird photos. And I'm not a bird photographer. I should make that clear. I'm a birder who finally got a camera when I went to the Galapagos Islands. And it's a small one, but it's perfectly adequate for what I want. And so, and perfectly adequate for people to see on Instagram and Facebook. And they are like, wow, and I feel so good. It's almost like this is a total secular thing, right? It's not, but it's like opening up a whole new avenue of being astonished and telling about it, right? And so people then are writing to me and saying, "What? Wow, this is so great." And you go, do what, and the other. And people say, we'd like for you to come and do a presentation. So I come and do a presentation on whatever they asked me to do it on is really how it works.
I love that. My husband says, what do you want to do when you retire? And I say, I want to take school children around the local bird marsh. He's like, yeah, you know, I get it. He's going to read lots and lots of more books and I'm going to be out at the marsh.
So interesting. In our birding club, so the thing that reignited my birding life here was a combination of the pandemic and retirement and a very special bird that showed up that thousands of people came to Maryland to see. And it was the painted bunting.
Mm.
Do you have painted buntings in California? I don't believe you do. Yeah.
No, we don't.
But this is a very rare bird that came down to the river. And that reignited my birding life in a big way, which included joining my local birding club. And the birding club has a youth portion of the club, all for young people. And it got started during the pandemic when, because schools were locked down and so forth, a lot of kids went outside. Maybe yours did a lot more and became birders. And they've kept that up. And so the club has tried to find a way to take them out with great regularity to do birding. So there's something you can do right now.
That's so great. I love watching kids get into birding because for many kids, they haven't lost that sense of awe and wonder yet. Life kind of beats it out of us and then we need to recover it as adults. But kids are just, you know, our youngest is 5 years old and we'll walk from the house to the car and she'll see a crow and it just lights her up. Whereas yes. 95% of adults would be like, yeah, it's a crow. Hurry up. We're running late. And I have to fight that impulse in myself. No, sure. It's a crow. It's wonderful. What can we learn from this crow? What is the crow doing? What is the crow into? Is it the same one we saw yesterday? Can we tell? You know, just to lean into that. And I think for many folks who are getting more in touch with wonder, one of the easiest ways there, besides going out in nature, is spending some time with kids. And talk to a young parent. They're ready for a break. They will let you take their kids to the park for a little bit.
And as they do that, they become great birders.
Yes. They're so observant. Children notice everything.
It's very much like a Where's Waldo, and they are good spotters.
It's so true.
Spotters. Yeah. So I mentioned Ecuador. We went to Mindo. Our oldest daughter was in the Peace Corps in Ecuador, and then she taught at Cotopaxi Academia at the IBS school there. So we visited Ecuador quite a lot, actually. And it's a birding paradise. Mm. So these are birds that many people in the States will never have an opportunity to see. So I like to do, and I like to share. I like to tell about it. I like to be a witness. You know that song by Ben Harper? Bless, if you don't, I want you to listen to it after this. It's called Blessed to Be a Witness.
Hmm. I like Ben Harper, but I don't know that song. I'll check it out.
You will love it. So anyway, I feel blessed to be a witness.
Yeah. Well, Roy, where are you finding hope these days? Where are you finding hope?
Yeah, where am I finding hope? Well, I guess in a couple of things I would say about that, I work with pastors around the country as a leadership coach. It's kind of my second career, though I hesitate to put it exactly that way. It's my second chapter, or third chapter. And church right now for a lot of people is a tough place to be. But the people that I'm working with are committed. They're inquisitive. They're looking to grow, and they're looking to fine-tune skills that are actually skills for today and not yesterday or 10 years ago. The whole purpose of my work is to help people stay in for the long haul, a little bit like running a marathon. In the first few miles of a marathon, everything is very exciting because the crowds are all there. Then you get into about mile 16. You may be at about mile 16 where all of a sudden it's like, what was I thinking?
Yeah. Everything hurts and I'm really tired.
Exactly. What was I thinking? And the crowds are not there at mile 15 through 19. They're just not there. So I work with pastors and a lot of them in that place. And that are very aware that they are in a marathon, they are in a long run, and ultimately we know how this is going to turn out, but in day to day we really don't, and they're seeking to be skilled and faithful, and kind, and so I find hope in that. They're not in despair. They're not giving up in any way. This is their calling, and they're staying true to their calling. Not that they have any ego around being experts or so on. They're just steady on. And so I find that hopeful, actually. And, you know, if you want to link that to birds, because I figured there's got to be some connection, right, to all of this. That's what, by the way, that's what your book is all about. So migration and birds that migrate, their ability to do that is really, one, it's astonishing, it's remarkable, but I think of the capacity of pastors and other leaders to carry on is related to that. That they're riding the wind, and not giving up.
That is a good reminder for all of us, I think, whether you're at mile 3 or mile 16 or mile 25 and a half, to stay the course, right? Finish the race.
Exactly. So I find that to be hopeful. I think that there, I don't know how this period of history is going to, what's on the other side. I don't know how we're going to get on the other side. You alluded to that. And how do people stay grounded, not overly anxious fearful, all of those things are something I think about a lot. And I do believe that not exactly in the religious sense, but I do believe birding is a universal practice for those who are of an inclination to consider God. It becomes a spiritual practice. For those who are may not know that they're considering God's creation, it's also a grounding practice that takes away your fears. If you're really paying attention, then you're not caught up in your own anxiety. You're not caught up in the next thing that's going to happen. You're caught up in what is present to you in that moment. And I, Courtney, believe that just that skill enables us to see one another and be present to one another when we're not standing out in the woods or a field somewhere looking at a bird. It has a carryover kind of posture to it.
It's a spiritual practice that changes you even after you leave the woods.
Definitely does. It has formed me. And you may know, and others may know too, the theologian Rowan Williams. Rowan Williams actually has written quite a bit about birding as a spiritual practice. And again, your listeners will only know this when they read your book, that you quote him in your book.
I do. I actually didn't know that Rowan Williams was a birder. I've read some of his work. I had not come across that. And my editor was like, just so you know, you may be interested, and pointed me toward that. And so the second, you know, when we'd gone through some edits, I was able to drop some Rowan Williams in there. But I love learning little by little, because birding is so often solitary. It's often early in the morning. And so unless someone tells you or writes about it, they may be a birder and you don't even know it. But there are so many pastors and theologians who are birders. Yes. And I'm only finding out now that people know I'm a birder and people are coming to me. But I think there's something really beautiful about that. The deeper you go into the things of God, often it draws you into nature in deeper ways as well.
Yes. Yes. And I think the other thing that people are looking for now, and maybe this is related to your question about hope, Courtney, is it's pretty widely known that a sense of belonging is really important. We're living through what we all know now is an epidemic of loneliness, even though we're all, quote, connected in these various ways. It's so deeply and darkly ironic that there's all this loneliness. So birding is a solitary thing, but I have made it a convivial practice by inviting people to go birding with me. Mm. And we developed, once I kind of got, and this is it's just my wheelhouse, way I move in the world. Once this happened, I started inviting people, and they began calling me the social director for our birding group. But it's a great sense of belonging.
Yeah.
So I bird alone. I go out alone. And that has its own beauty to it. But there's also something about belonging with one another and being in a community that's many people, sadly, do not find that in churches.
No, it's really true. We've been doing some research at our church about that epidemic of loneliness. And what we've found is the two populations who face it the most deeply are teenagers and young adults and seniors. And those are two groups who often would have the most time to bird. And so I think there is some beautiful connection there. Often when I go on birding tours and things, it's young adults. You know, I'm usually the only young mom there. I'm there by the grace of my husband, who's watching the kids for me for the couple days, and it's retirees. And so I think there is something there about that that connectivity, yes, and that possibility. And that's a beautiful thing. So I love that you're out there doing that in the world. You're not retired, Roy. You're just doing something else.
I'm doing something else. That's true. That is.
So we've come to the point in the podcast where I'm going to ask you our closing question, which is the hardest question of the show. Are you ready? Are you prepared for this?
I think so.
All right. Well, buckle up, because for a birder, this is a very difficult question. Roy Howard, what is your favorite bird?
Right. I knew you were going to ask that. I can't. I cannot answer that. But I can give you a favorite and a story with it.
Perfect.
And that's the great horned owl. In owls, period. Just owls. But the great horned owl showed up 200 yards from my neighborhood house, my house in my neighborhood. There's a woods over there by a stream that's connected to the Potomac River. I saw the great horned owl, unbelievably beautiful, and started monitoring this owl. Then the other showed up. So I followed these two great horned owls for 2 years.
Whoa.
And each time they came back, and last year I was walking, because they disappeared, which meant they're on the nest. You can hear them, but when they're on the nest, it's quiet, and it's very difficult to find an owl nest. But instead, I heard the begging cry of the great horned owl, and there were two, not one, but two owlets, all white and small, white baby great horned owls appeared. This is 300 yards from my neighborhood home. Where were they? They were in a pine tree behind a house on a suburban road.
Hmm.
And I can't wait to find them again, because this is just about the time that the owlets are born, in the middle of March, late March, early April.
Hmm. Well, that is a great favorite. That is a great favorite. We're 60 plus episodes and no one yet has said great horned owl. So you're unique in your joy. I don't actually think we've had a repeat bird. Everybody has a unique favorite, and that's been really fun.
I'm going to send you some photos.
Yes, please. There's no such thing as too many bird photos. Send them. Well, Roy, how can people connect with you if they're looking for you on Instagram? Is it okay for us to link to your profile in the show notes so people can,
yes,
find you and your bird photos?
Yes, yes. And I think you know how to do that.
Yes.
You and I are connected. And the same thing with Facebook.
Perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Well, everyone, check out Roy's beautiful photos, and you can connect with him if you're in the Maryland area and you need a birdie speaker for your event, for your church or non-church event, you can get a hold of him. Roy Howard, thank you so much for the gift of your time, your wisdom, and your wonder on The Thing with Feathers today.
Thank you. Thank you, Courtney.
The Thing with Feathers is produced by me, Courtney Ellis. Many thanks to Del Belcher for the music, to Todd Peterson for the name inspiration, and to Emily Dickinson for the beautiful poem and for being in the public domain. Until next time, my friends, keep looking up.
What does it go in your soul? Yes, it does.